That was a piece called Red, composed by Jane Rigler and performed by Roberta Michel, the opening track of her new album, Hush. And I'm excited that we're going to hear a bit about that piece later on in the episode. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Stephen Anthony Rawson. Whether you're new to the show or a longtime listener, thanks so much for tuning in. On today's episode, I'm going to be speaking with flutist Roberta Michel, and we're going to talk about her new album of solo flute works called Hush. Roberta is a Brooklyn-based flutist dedicated to performing the music of our time. She has commissioned and performed hundreds of new works and worked with many notable composers. She is also the flutist and co-director of Wavefield Ensemble and is a member of Pink Noise. Real quick, before we dive into my conversation with Roberta, I'd like to let you know that you can support Relevant Tones by becoming a subscriber on Patreon for just $5 a month. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook to get updates about upcoming shows and events. We greatly appreciate your support, so come check us out. And now let's get on with the show. Roberta, thanks so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to have some time to talk about your new album, Hush. That just came out on November 1st with New Focus Recordings. There are 5 really awesome tracks on this album, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about each of them. But first, can you tell me a little bit about how the idea for Hush got started?
The eponymous piece in the album, Hush, by Angelica Negron, I commissioned, I think, in 2012, and that was sort of the first of the set of the commissions, and I've often been commissioning and getting solo works written for me, and you know, I wanted more of them to be heard by more people, so I figured an album was a good way to do it. So yeah, with Hush, that first piece was a very, very personal piece to me because it was based on artwork by my father, and then after that, it was just a series of pieces that were written that all also felt extremely personal and sort of intimate and worked together as a collection.
Yeah, right off the bat, we can give a shout out to your dad. Is the cover art by him as well?
Yeah, so my father does horticultural art where he uses a scanner and places plant matter and materials on the scanner in really interesting and oftentimes very neurotic arrangements. And his work is absolutely beautiful and stunning. And so the cover photograph is his. And then the designer, Mark Wolf, did a really good job of integrating the text into the photograph.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. How did the piece Hush in conversations and its formation, how was it inspired by your father's photography?
Yeah, I was initially looking and thinking about a piece that would use my father's artwork in a way, both visually and from a sound perspective. And Angelica's husband, Jose, does amazing stuff with video art. So I ended up commissioning Angelica, but Jose did live video using images and sort of processing a little bit on the premiere. So that's sort of how that came about.
Yeah. The program notes throughout the album are so beautiful, and I'd love to quote it briefly here. It reads, the piece explores the idea of finding beauty in freedom, in stillness, and presence. I love that this track comes at the end of the album. The whole flow of the album is great, but at the end, the tone that you set with Hush is really wonderful. I know that's not a question, I'm sorry, but if there's any way that you'd like to respond to that or just thinking about its position in the track order.
It's interesting because, I've known Angelica for a long time. She's written other pieces for groups that I've worked with, but we didn't talk so much about this piece, about the sound and sort of that relationship with my father and his work. But growing up in Maine, you know, growing up along the ocean, I sort of hear the end of this piece is like waves going in and out at the end. And it feels like the whole piece feels like nostalgic, although like kind of odd and creepy and strange in the nostalgia in parts of it. Like there's this little sort of microtonal thing in the middle. And it sort of reminds me both of like the nostalgia of growing up in Maine and my dad's like strange obsession with weird music like Frank Zappa and stuff. And it's like a very interesting combination of those things. One other thing about the title, that the idea of Hush is not necessarily to be quiet or anything, but a lot of music that I've really loved over the years has been music that's like very much on the edge of silence. My dissertation was on Chirino's music, flute music, and I'm like obsessed with Feldman and things like that. So living in this sort of very quiet, intimate world is something that's always been really appealing to me.
Yeah, I feel you very much on that. Thank you. Let's jump to the beginning of the album and talk about Red, which is the track we're going to feature at the very beginning of the show. Can you tell me a bit about this piece? This was composed by Jane Rigler.
So this is the one piece that's not a commission on the album, but when I first moved to New York in 2006, I saw Jane playing, and I think she played this piece the first time I saw her, and as well as other improvisations. And this piece, it just blew me away, both her performance of it and the piece itself. It's basically a guided improvisation based on a set of different fingering trills and different ways that they activate alternative tones on the instrument, and you go through these series of progressions with these different fingerings in a piece that ends up being somewhere between 4 to 7 minutes of like almost entirely circular breathing and this like very whirlwind sort of invocation.
Yeah, oh my gosh. You know, it's funny because I wouldn't have guessed that it was an improv based work. And now I'm reading that Jane is a certified deep listening facilitator. That's awesome. Wow.
She's an incredible improviser and composer. And I think most of her pieces, every piece that I've played of hers, and I recorded an album with her that I'm not sure when it's coming out, of a bunch of her flute music. And all of it incorporates some form of improvisation or another. And some of it is sort of more deeply ingrained in the written score. But there's always a sense of freedom and sort of shaping of things.
Yeah, and your playing of it, vibrant is a word that Jane uses to describe the piece. It's also quite frenetic, but it's all of these explorations or contemplations on the color red.
Yeah, red being like the color of violence and the color of blood, and also the color of, I love that, so Jane lived in Spain for a while, and red is apparently a word for network in Spanish, which I didn't know before this piece. And so this idea of network and of linking together, so both linking together of the actual fingering patterns and the physicality of it, but the connection between there are three different sections of the piece and how they all link together via the breath and circular breathing, and the way it integrates this sort of like violence, but also like other meanings of like love and, you know, all the other associations with the color red, but also this idea of everything sort of threaded together.
Yeah, I love that. And how the idea for the piece develops. And there are those Morse code sounding moments in there too. It's such a fun and rich piece to listen to.
Yeah, and she doesn't specify like exactly what rhythms to use, but you sort of find the patterns within each grouping that you like and go for. You can go like more Morse code, more or more trill, and you can find different sort of pitches and other sounds within that, which are really interesting.
I want to jump to another piece on the album. This one really blew me away. It's by Jen Baker, called The Great Bridge and a Lion's Gate. I really enjoyed so much of the piece, from the timbral development and the form to the imagery it evoked. Can you tell me a bit about this piece?
Yeah, so I've known Jen for a really long time. I think I first met her via SEM Ensemble, which we both play with quite often. And Jen is a remarkable trombonist, as well as composer and improviser as well. And she has written a couple pieces, two pieces, I think, for my other ensemble, Wayfield Ensemble. And she's also the trombonist in the group. And I was looking for more pieces, and I thought she would be perfect for writing something for me, because I love her voice, and I love her as a human. She's such an amazing soul. And this was, I think I first talked to her about this in 2021, maybe. Maybe it was 2020, but, you know, in the deep, dark times. And she and I we went for a long walk in Prospect Park, and we're talking about, you know, things that we were feeling during the time and like ways in which our lives were shifting. And the sort of Great Bridge and Lion's Gate is a term she came up with about this period of intense transition that we were all going through, and hopefully it opening up into lots of power and energy. Jen also does a lot of work with energy and things like that, and you can hear that even in her playing. She wrote an amazing book called, I think, Hooked on Multiphonics for Trombonists, and is like incredible at playing multiphonics and creating this huge energetic sound world. So I thought she'd be writing a piece, I imagined it would be something that was very thoughtful and very based on like multiphonics and chords. And then I got the score, and it was just all like articulation as fast as possible out of the gate. And I was just like, oh boy, I have to really work on this one. And there is like a beautiful section of like chordal, almost chorale-like singing and playing, where I'm doing counterpoint with the flute and my voice, and that I think comes directly out of Jen's exploration with her own singing and playing.
Oh, I'm so glad you talked a little bit about the contrapuntal playing in the piece. The writing is so beautiful. Why don't we go ahead and take a moment here and let's listen to the piece. This is The Great Bridge and a Lion's Gate by Jen Baker and performed by Roberta Michelle.
Ah!
I want to talk to you a bit about the track Quintet. Wow, what a cool concept. Quintet as bass flute and four loudspeakers.
Yeah, so I was introduced to Merritt via my good friend Jonah Wu, an amazing violinist who runs Pink Noise Ensemble that I play with. And I had a like Zoom meeting after listening to a bunch of Merritt's music with him, and he was a flute player originally, so he understands the instrument really well. And we were talking, and he had this idea of creating this huge piece of a quintet for, one person. It ends up being a for one bass flute and then four loudspeakers. And each of the loudspeakers is pre-recorded material that I did. I recorded that in Berlin. It was actually I flew to Berlin in the next morning without thinking about jet lag, then had like an 8-hour session where we recorded all the backing material. And it was like on bass flute, so I was a bit done by the end of the day. And then you manipulate some of those, and when you're performing it, if all tech goes well, which, tech, but there'll be one part coming out of each loudspeaker, and then you're playing a quintet with those four loudspeakers, and it ends up sounding, it feels really epic to be inside of that sound of that many bass flutes, especially when there's distortion and other sorts of sounds applied to them as well.
Oh, yeah, I imagine. Here's a line from the program notes. As the piece progressed, the medium became a means to reimagine the corporeality created by the clash of acoustic and virtual spaces. I was wondering if you could talk about that sense of corporeality and how you experience that or embody that while performing.
Yeah, so it's interesting because the embodiment of it is you're surrounded by essentially yourself, right? But it also are these this very disembodied thing, and the sound is so manipulated, so it feels at once like something very much from you, but also coming at you in a really interesting way. And yeah, I think all of the sounds are very visceral and feel embodied to make. I think with Merritt's understanding of flute playing, and just bass flute itself is just, this hulking thing that you but yeah, I think it sort of that how it obscures, between the live and the pre-recorded is done in a really interesting way. And it's sort of, I think the initial inspiration was Fernie Ho's Mimesine for bass flute, which also has pre-recorded bass flute, but it treats the sort of subject in a very different way. But coming out of that, I think Merritt sort of took it and created this very epic, vivid thing.
Yeah, the epicness and expansiveness of the piece. As a listener, I really enjoy experiencing a work where I can find myself thinking more about scale than form and really living inside the work. Where new sounds become familiar sounds and memory can play a more wandering and active role.
Yeah, there are some like really, again, like nostalgic or even memory-inducing melodies that feel like they've come from another place that's not this piece in some ways, and then get treated over and over again. There's a middle section that's just very lyrical and melodic that always feels surprising to me. And there are also like the way that memory is treated from the recorded parts. There are some that take like previous figures and will just take one note and break it up to recreate things that are spread around the ensemble. So it sort of creates this memory by having one note that then gets distorted and moved around. So it deals with it in that way too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
There's one more piece on the album, and that's called And For You Castles by Victoria Chia. It falls second on the album, right after Red, with a very different change of pace, and it's for solo flute and playback.
It's interesting because, like Merritt's piece, the playback is me. I recorded just some very simple chords on the flute that you play over, and Tori's writing, I just find her writing to be so beautiful. I'm like the biggest fan of her music. My group Wayfield has commissioned her a couple times and played another piece of hers. And Pink Noise is actually commissioning her right now. And we're going to play a piece of hers in Switzerland and Croatia in the spring. And her music just explores these sort of very slow moving textures and colors that change really subtly over time. But those subtleties can feel really huge, I think, when you listen to them and really microscopically look at the texture in the world. So it also feels very, very fragile and sort of intimate. And in this piece, there's a lot of writing, a lot of rhythmic writing that's based on text. So I'm sort of shaping and intoning texts that are not meant to be heard or known by the listener. I was told not to share them.
I won't ask.
Yeah, but it feels very, they're oftentimes from very what feel like personal and intimate worlds. And I once asked Tori, I think I was interviewing her for a podcast for a thing that Wayfield was doing, and I was like, everything feels so poetic in your titles and your music, and do you just love poetry? And she's like, actually, no. I was like, and it kind of blew my mind, and I think there was a much more nuanced answer there. But yeah, I feel like it's this very poetic world that you live in inside of this piece. And also, it's a really interesting way of dealing with rhythm and creating with rhythm based on vocal text that we never actually end up hearing.
Yeah, there's even a kind of poetry in how Tori writes about the piece. It says, intimacy in close quarters of the touch of a sound, the promise of communication and the possibility of stability without fulfillment. There's this sense of, if not necessarily poetry, then elusiveness.
The title comes from chess, from castles and chess, and a time that was had when, like, that sort of game of chess was a sort of metaphor for something else in life. And yeah, huh. It's an interesting...
That's so interesting. I hadn't made that connection.
Yeah. I'm not sure the connection has to be there at all either, but yeah.
Well, I want to ask, are you still playing through these pieces live? Have you had, or do you have opportunities to play these in New York or elsewhere?
I am. I did an album release show in New York, and I think the live stream is still up. I'll be posting videos, if not. And yeah, I'm doing some shows. I'm going to be playing in New Orleans in January, playing a bunch of the music, and hopefully more dates in the spring as well.
Very cool. Are there any performances coming up this month?
November 26th, I'm playing a faculty recital at Sarah Lawrence College. And I'll be playing a couple of the pieces from the album. I'll be playing Tori's piece as well as premiering a new piece by Erica Dicker and doing some other flute and piano music as well.
Well, Roberta, thanks so much for taking the time to talk today. It was a lot of fun to talk about your album and these pieces, and really enjoyed talking with you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Hey, that's all for our show today. Thanks so much to Roberta Michel for sharing her music and conversation with us. And thanks so much to you, our listeners. We want to hear from you, your thoughts on the episode and the music, what you've been listening to. You can drop us a line at relevanttones.com. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. For Relevant Tones, I'm Stephen Anthony Rawson. Thanks for listening, and talk to you again soon.